This week on The Future of Sex.
Sex is a basic human right. And sometimes things like sexual surrogacy and things like a very human-like sex doll can provide that kind of intimacy that people so desperately crave.
And I've been struggling with that. Like, making this magazine, identifying as a pornographer, I think really affected the way a lot of people, particularly men, the way that they saw me.
There's a whole other side to 50 Shades of Grey on how much consent really was happening and how much coercion was going on.
You know, for me, I'm thinking, what is the real orgasm gap? And I think the real orgasm gap is realizing that you deserve it.
Hey, I'm Bryony, and welcome to another episode of Future of Sex, the podcast that explores the evolving worlds of sex and tech. This week, we had our very first live show. It all went down in Brooklyn, New York, and I'm excited to share the recording from that evening with you on this podcast. Now, before we get started, we just want to remind you, this podcast contains explicit language and adult themes, so please make sure you've got headphones in if there are little ones around. Okay, so on Monday night, the night before Valentine's Day, we gathered a small crowd in Williamsburg, Brooklyn at Sweatshop. It's a great Aussie cafe. If you haven't been and you're in the neighborhood, check it out. Now, we came together to listen to an all-female panel of sex pioneers. So you're going to hear from Gigi Engel, who's a sex and dating writer and has also appeared in an earlier episode on the podcast. Mackenzie Peck, a feminist pornographer and publisher of Math Magazine. And finally, Lydia Bonilla, founder of House of Plume. Now, throughout the evening, we talked about the future of sex, obviously, and how that all interrelates with porn, intimacy, virtual reality, teledildonics, and real dolls. So it's an interesting conversation. I hope you enjoy it. Thanks for those that came along. And a special thanks to our sponsors, Mulholland Sports Bar on Grand Street in Williamsburg. Thanks for being such a proud sponsor. If you'd like more info on Mulholland's, you can check out the sponsor page, futureofsex.org/sponsors, or follow Mulholland Sports Bar on Instagram, or hey, just go down there and drink a beer at 312 Grand Street in Williamsburg. Okay, now, on with the show.
Welcome to Future of Sex. Let's get started, please, guys. We've got a seat here in the front row here. Grab a beer. We don't have mics with speakers. We've just got mics for recording tonight, so we're going to speak loudly. But thank you for coming. Future of Sex has been on my mind for a while now, for about a year. But it's gathering momentum. We've seen publicity about VR porn in the media. We had the release of 50 Shades Darker last weekend. Of course, Donald Trump has reinstated the global gag rule to cut funding for foreign aid to abortion advocacy. So, Future of Sex, we're all thinking about it in different ways. And not as you'd usually think about sex. Although, however, I want to get some audience participation. So if you've ever had sex, please, a round of applause. And also a round of applause for our musician, Kaylin. Thank you. And thanks for coming. So Kaylin will be playing after the panel tonight. But our objective with the time here today and the time I set aside was really to explore the future of sex in such a changing world with politics, with technology. Everything is changing so rapidly, and I wanted to bring together some people that are really steeped in knowledge about where sexuality is heading and the influence of technology and sex tech, and specifically from a women's perspective, a female perspective. So it's no accident that these three women are sitting here beside me tonight. They're all chosen and curated by me because they're very outspoken on matters around female desire and female pleasure. And I think the thread that brings all three of you together is that they're building their own narrative where you don't see sex talked about in the media, they're creating it. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce first of all Gigi Engel. Now, Gigi is a sex and relationship writer. She has her own podcast called DSM, Dirty Sexy Monogamy, that she does with her boyfriend. And she's also a weekly columnist for Ask Gigi. Now, Ask Gigi has been going for 5 years. So my first question to Gigi was, what is the question you get asked the most from readers? The past 5 years, what are people asking you the most?
Sure. Well, I think unsurprisingly to a lot of women in this room, the most popular question that I get from a lot of women is how to get their boyfriends to fuck them more. And I think that it seems unusual to a lot of people that so many women would have this question, but there are so many resources that are available to men on how to get their partners to have sex with them more, because men are traditionally considered a more sexual side of the gender spectrum. But we all know that women also want to have a lot of sex, and so there isn't a lot of resources out there as a highly sexual woman, because if you are a woman who wants sex, you're automatically deemed a whore. And so that's something that women come to me mostly with, because they want to know how to up the sex.
What's your answer?
I give a lot of answers. A lot of the questions are obviously specific to the reader. Sometimes it has to do with just having most of the time it has to do with a woman who has a much higher sex drive than her boyfriend. So the way that I try to deal with the situation is to encourage this woman to have an open and honest communication with her boyfriend on how to experience sexuality in a way that might not necessarily be your classic P and the V sex, because every person in a relationship deserves to have an orgasm. That is a basic human right, to have a healthy sex life. So if you are not feeling like you have that with your partner, then you need to figure out ways that you can compromise. Say your partner wants to have, you want to have sex as a woman 7 times a week in a perfect world. But your partner only wants to...
I'm sorry, 7 times?
I'm just speaking for... Not yeah, okay. Asking for a friend, a reader. But your partner only wants to have sex 3 times a week. So maybe you can compromise on 4 or 5 times a week.
Right.
Also, maybe you have partner masturbation sessions together. And that way you guys can still experience the intimacy and you as the woman still get to have that sexual pleasure that you want without having to put unnecessary pressure on a guy who doesn't necessarily want to have intercourse.
I like it. I didn't think enough women are talking about it, so thank you. To introduce our next guest, sitting next to me is Lydia Bonilla. She is the founder of House of Plume, which is, I would say, a company that creates elegant sex toy storage boxes, devices. And Lydia created this company because it doesn't exist otherwise. So if you walk into a sex toy shop and you ask for something to hold your sex toys and organize or a device, didn't exist. So that was really interesting to me. I think we all would keep it in like a side drawer or something, and there's problems with that. But the question that I have for you is, do you think that people are using sex toys more in 2017, now steeped in this world of sex toys? Is it something that is becoming more popular?
Oh, sure, absolutely. I mean, sex toys have moved into the mainstream, just in media alone, in cable, and you have different ways that people are getting access to information about sex toys. They're also sold in Walmart and Target and Walgreens. So they're just several more different avenues of distribution.
Is it mostly women that are buying them, or is it guys too?
Honestly, most sex toy retailers would tell you that it's 50-50. Mm-hmm. And I was surprised by that, in the sense that when I first started, I anticipated that most of my customers would be women. When I realized that men were actually buying the boxes and cases for their partners, because they were also interested in using sex toys and we're getting tired of the excuse of, well, where are we going to put them? The kids are going to, you know, get to them. And so we can't possibly use them. And so I was like, whoa, guys are buying this? Really? Oh, okay. And it's interesting because we also designed it so that it didn't look overtly masculine or feminine. Because, you know, I came up with the idea, but my industrial designer is a man. And we wanted it to both appeal to men and women, and we didn't want to go into the the stereotypes of what sexy looks like and what women like, you know, like something shiny with rhinestones and pink and right. all those stereotypes of what, you know, people think women like. Hmm.
Thank you. And last on the panel, Mackenzie Peck. So Mackenzie is a pornographer and the publisher of Math Magazine, which you see right here on the table. Take a look. And encourages sexual diversity in what she displays in the magazines. Also, it's not tech, which is so freaking cool. And the images you see in there aren't what you'd typically see in a Playboy or a porn magazine. She encourages really diverse body shapes, things you wouldn't normally see in the media. That's really interesting. I think also when I was reading about you and the expectations you have for photographers that work with you is that they also strip down and be naked when they're taking a shoot with the subject, or at least in their underwear. And so, I mean, for all your progressive out there, like breaking boundaries and taboo work, it so surprised me when I read this interview with you that was last year, and you said, you know what, I've been publishing this magazine, but my parents still don't know. And I still, when my mum comes to visit, I still hide the magazines under my pillows. And I was like, Mackenzie, kind of identify with you in a way. Like, mum doesn't listen to my podcast, but I'm so curious, since that interview is published, is that still the case with your parents?
No, it is still not. It's not the case. You know, it's amazing. People don't believe that pornographers can be embarrassed, but it's true, we can. I like to say that you can read the magazine on the subway because of the discreet cover, but I actually tried it and it's really scary because, I mean, I put the thing together and I'm like, wait, is there a giant dick on the next page? I can't remember. Kind of like hold it a little bit closer. But yeah, I did come out to my parents as a pornographer. I was scared, you know, it's like really personal. Mm-hmm. And growing up, you know, they're very accepting people, very progressive thinkers, but we never really talked about sex. So to say that I had started this career was pretty intimidating. And I think telling them was a part of coming to terms with like my career choice and like coming into this new life I've created for myself.
Right. And what did they say when...
They're the sweetest. They're the best people.
What's their like favorite article?
The thing about them is that they'll talk about everything but the content. So it'll be like they'll forward me business articles, like small business advice. They're really sweet. So they support in the best way they can.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Well, I'm excited to have you all here. You're all experts in your own way, and you're kind of, if we look around the room, like you guys are the ones that see into the most bedrooms of all. You hear what people like about sex, what people do with sex. You have an insight that most people don't. And coupled with that, you also are part of this Women of Sex Tech community that we're all a part of. And so for me, when I was thinking about the panel tonight and thinking about we want to have a female perspective on sex, one thing that comes to mind and is often talked about in the media is the orgasm gap and the fact that women take 13 minutes longer to have an orgasm and what that means. And thinking about technology and where the future is going, do you think that sex tech is going to close the orgasm gap? Start with you.
I definitely think that there have been so many incredible innovations that have helped to bridge this gap. I mean, the vaginal opening is a solid like inch and a half from where the clitoris is. And 2 out of 3 women require clitoral stimulation in order to have an orgasm. Now, the sex ed that we get in school is not it only teaches you about the utilities of sex, basically how not to get pregnant, how to put a condom on a banana, and then how to just like stick it in and use a vagina like you're masturbating, and then that's it. And then she has an orgasm and so do you. Like, not so true. So
I think, don't do that till you're married.
Yeah. Also, and also like the don't ever do this or you will get pregnant and then you will die. So sex tech has done so many amazing things. You see these incredible women entrepreneurs like Alex Fine and Janet, who founded Dame Products, and they created the Eva, which is a small a clitoral vibrator that hooks under the labia, so you can actually have clitoral stimulation during penetrative sex with your partner, which is such a crazy thing, but it seems so obvious, but it's only recent that we've had these sorts of products become available. And we have like the WeVibe sync, so that you and your partner can, it hooks under so you and your partner can still have penetrative sex and still have an orgasm. And it really actually helps for men who can get past the idea of using a sex toy, because we all know a lot of guys like do get intimidated, and I think that having these conversations will help alleviate some of that stress. But having these vibrators and these sex toys available will automatically help couples get closer, because then when you know that you're going to have an orgasm, your partner knows that they're giving you an orgasm, then that sexual experience is going to be so much pleasurable for the two of you. And so I think that there's so much potential for sex tech, because the clitoris is only there for pleasure, and the easier we can get to it, the better for all of us.
You know, for me, I'm thinking, what is the real orgasm gap? And I think the real orgasm gap is realizing that you deserve one. You know, once you realize you deserve one, I think there's many ways of getting to it. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, great products that will do that for you. But it's really, I think, the one thing that I deal with in conversations with women is that they don't even feel like they deserve it. It's not even served on the menu of sex for some women, particularly if you're of an older generation. So the gap is really, to me, is first determining that it is your right. It is your right to have pleasure during sex, and it's not just a vehicle for men to get off.
So true.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
I feel like there were a lot of occasions in the past where I was like, don't worry about it. Like, not worth it. Mm-hmm. Not the case anymore.
Right.
For me, I think a lot about information sharing. Just finding out, like, what you want before you even try it. You know, like, discover new things, you know. For me, FetLife was a great website for discovering new kinks and new ways to have sex. Sometimes you don't know you want something until you read about it, or that you don't want something until you read about it.
Mm-hmm. And on that, so I'm sure you have a couple of opinions about 50 Shades Darker, which was just released and popularized BDSM for a lot of women that realized, wow, this is it. But is that really real sex? What we're seeing, a real fetish stuff? So you can tell it.
I'm actually really excited about that series of films, because it's bringing a lot of conversations up. So I've been spending some time in comment threads for, you know, like trailers and stuff for 50 mm-hmm. Shades. And to see the discussions that are happening that might not have occurred otherwise is really exciting. I mean, people say some dumb shit, but hopefully it gets some balls rolling in terms of discovering something new.
Right. How about you, Lydia?
Yeah, I totally agree with Mackenzie. I'm in the sense that, you know, it brings up the conversation of what, you know, that kind of, what that life is. I mean, I'm wearing a collar that says mistress, but I'm not really a mistress. I'm actually a submissive. I just like this joke. But, so what I find fascinating is that people are interested in it. And women that didn't, you know, the most powerful women I know want to be in the bedroom submissive, you know, like super powerful, like they're in the boardroom, and that's, you know, the fantasy that they're looking for. And I think, you looking at that, looking at the film and, you know, reading the books, it has allowed some women to even think about having that sort of fantasy. And so what I'm interested in is, you know, what the real life, you know, BDSM, you know, the real, what the real life is like versus, you know, the movie.
What is the real life like?
You know, the real life is really, it's a lot of communication, honestly. You really do have to, you know, you really have to openly communicate about what's acceptable for you in being a submissive. And also, what I'm fascinated by is the power play. So that the submissive actually has tons of power. And that's kind of, you know, what I'm exploring as a submissive.
Interesting.
There's definitely a misconception with submissives that they just like lay there and stuff happens. It's like, no, you're very much engaged with what's happening.
Do you want to break it down a bit more? Or is this room all the time?
Well, I think it has to do with consent, communication, make sure everyone's having a nice time, and being present. It's not like you're checked out.
I think the thing actually that makes people, first of all, a lot of studies have shown that 50% of people have either had bondage fantasies or have participated in some kind of bondage kink blindfolding type fantasy. So this is actually a lot more widespread than I think people even realized before. But I think that another thing that 50 Shades of Grey, they have a little bit of it in the movie and the books, but I think there isn't a lot of explanation around the boundaries and the safety that needs to be taken into consideration when you're having a BDSM fantasy. They have the safe word, whatever it is, like red, but they don't really, a lot of what Anna goes through in those books is, I feel, kind of coerced. And so there's a whole other side to 50 Shades of Grey on how much consent really was happening and how much coercion was going on. Because we are talking about this sort of virginal, inexperienced girl who walks into this kinky guy who actually isn't really exploring BDSM as like a healthy sexual fantasy, but more as a way to deal with very serious childhood trauma. So that whole movie and the whole book series has a whole multi-layer thing that goes very much beyond I want to be blindfolded and spanked because I think it's really sexy. It's actually, for Christian Grey, an exploration of a therapy of sorts. So I think that is a little bit left out of the conversation.
There's also two sides of BDSM in the sense that there are people that they're in the life the whole time, and there's some people that they're just sexually, you know, like, you know, bondage. So I, you know, had a conversation with a woman about, you know, what that was like to, you know, kind of turn, she would go to his house and she would turn it on, like she was, you know, kind of under his control, versus what I prefer to explore, which is just, you know, it's sexually. So it's totally, you know, two different things, and it's two different, I guess, ways of being, and it's different, you know, boundaries that are put in place.
Oh, no, I totally agree. I totally agree with that. I just think that a lot of what happens in those books, because it was a lot of people's first experience with the BDSM kink community, which obviously has been underground for a really long time. And another misconception is that people think E.L. James, like, created bondage, which is just ridiculous. Right. Don't even get me started on that. But I think that those two different worlds and those two different explorations are not really covered. And I think that for a novice, that can be confusing because I think a lot of people who are interested in exploring BDSM are like, well, I mean, I don't want to go to a guy's house and then be his submissive for like weeks on end. And then they think that that's all it is. And I think that having more conversations about what BDSM really does entail and the trust and the safety and the boundaries is very important.
I think that's a really good point because it's like 50 Shades of Grey or 50 Shades Darker has been like the 101 for so many people into like, oh my God, this world exists. And women especially are so disproportionately compared to males worried about engaging in fetish in terms of like a moral, like what does this say about me? And the same thing goes with porn. Like we're so worried that can we still be a good feminist and engage in porn or engage in being a submissive? And so I'd put that question to you guys is like, well, can those two things exist?
This question breaks my heart so much. it frustrates me. I was thinking about this on the way over that if you consider a man, a generic American man, and you think, okay, that guy, he masturbates. And how does that affect your idea of who he is and what kind of person he is, right? I think to this day, men can still be human, like a human with a diversity of interests and passions, and still admit to masturbating regularly. You know, do the same thought experiment with a woman, and I think suddenly, you know, this came up earlier, suddenly she identifies as like a very sexual creature, you know, and suddenly the ideas or things that you associate with that person are limited quickly. Mm-hmm. And I've been struggling with that, like making this magazine, identifying as a pornographer, I think really affected the way a lot of people, particularly men, the way that they saw me, in some ways that were pretty.
What would be the reaction?
The toughest thing was that there were maybe three or four guys in my life who I considered very dear to me, who basically hit me up because they thought I was DTF, because, you know, I make this magazine, I know about kink and BDSM and stuff, and, you know, they're misinformed, and hopefully they'll come around, but it's a shame.
Yeah.
I was just saying, like, can you still be a good feminist and right. watch porn or this?
Oh, completely. That's so, you know? So stupid.
Women are so worried about this.
Yeah, I mean, bondage has been around since the beginning of time. You know, bondage or you know, BDSM or whatnot, it's just about what you like sexually, versus feminism is about what you want to see out in the world. You know, what you want to see in your government, what you want to see in your communities, your families. It's totally, to me, totally, completely separate. I don't even know why people put it in the same bag.
So what do you do when a guy finds out that you run an erotic sex tech company, sex toy organizer? How do you be a badass bitch?
Oh, God.
Yeah, girl.
Right? So, so what happens is that, You know, sex, the conversation of sex is such a touchy topic for so many people. And it's, you know, it instantly, for some people, brings them back to something that happened in childhood or whatever. And they start, particularly men, start to act like five-year-olds. You know, I'm like, what are you talking about? Why are you bringing this up now? Or why do we need to discuss, like, what happened to you as a kid or anything. It's really fascinating that all these things just start to come out. I don't know if maybe people just like to talk to me or whatever, but good grief, I've heard so many different things, you know? Mm-hmm. And when you say to someone, okay, this is what I'm involved in, they already automatically, you know, have different things that come to their head. Versus the one is that, you know, we're gonna have sex immediately. Like, no, you're not that interested. Seriously, I don't, you know, really, you know. So it comes with this caveat of like criteria that you have to kind of be a little bit more selective than I did before when I was just a banker.
The old world.
Yeah. The old world.
Can you be a feminist and a submissive? That was the question, right?
Yeah, or watch porn, or any of these things that
women
struggle with.
I think those two things are completely, they're not mutually exclusive. I would say that I don't consider feminism to be just outside in the world and what you want to see happen. I think feminism is still very much present in your sex life, because it's about, as long as you are doing what you want to do, and you are exploring your pleasure, and you are doing things because you have chosen to do them, whether you're a dominant, a submissive, or otherwise, then that is feminism. That is taking control of your sexuality. That is being unafraid of what you want. That is knowing what you deserve in the bedroom. That is understanding that having a healthy sex life is a basic human right, and you deserve what you want, whether it is to get spanked, whipped, and chained, or to put your boyfriend in a chastity cage wearing a ball gag. That's up to you.
And I think representation is really important, and that's a feminist act. You know, the more you see women shamelessly Or I like to say shame light. Like you could have like a little, it's okay.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
you want to hashtag light. That?
Yeah, I love that.
If you're owning it, that's great. Mm-hmm.
But then like people, women who might be afraid or anybody who might be afraid in maybe a small conversation at like a dinner party to talk about some of these things might be a little bit more emboldened because they've seen people like themselves represented. And I mean, like, sex workers are like the ultimate feminist to me, like, and they've been empowering themselves for a very long time. You know, like, they like founded the West, like they were funding like cities, you know. And I think a lot of people forget just how badass like sex workers are and what they've done for feminism.
Mm-hmm. Strippers too. You've got Jack the Stripper, who's like that badass. Mm-hmm. She like now runs her own publishing company, and she just loves stripping. It's fucking awesome.
Jack the Stripper.
Yeah, look her up. She's okay. You should have her on the podcast. She's fucking great. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. No. You mentioned something before which got me. I don't want to bring it down into this, but I think it's really important to discuss the current political climate and how it's going to impact sexuality. Because, yes, we're sitting at the table, we're so progressive, and we're saying you can watch porn and you can also have an abortion and be a feminist too. What's going on right now, and how is that shaping the future of sex?
Well, considering the crazy political climate, I'm actually working on a piece right now that's called Can I Sue the GOP for Killing My Sex Drive? Because I've just been so involved in activism and fighting against so much misogyny that I thought we were so past that it's honestly very heartbreaking. And the way that it's affecting sexuality is that it's scaring people again. And we're supposed to, every time you see the media, you see, you know, two members of the same sex kissing, and we're supposed to be so progressive, and then we fucking have Donald Trump in the White House, like, fucking shit up, and Steve Bannon, the anti-Semite, and we're like, fuck, what now? And it's kind of scary, and it makes me angry, and hence the no sex drive.
So I've been, considering that topic, too. You know, after the election, I mean, I remember the day, probably the day after, I was like, okay, now what? You know, like, what are we going to do? And to me, actually, these times are very exciting. You know, maybe because I like to fight or something, I like to box. But I like all this kind of, you know, this stuff like stirring up and coming up because it was already there. And so now we just have an opportunity to deal with it and create what we want from it. But with respect to how it impacts people's sex lives, I mean, one is that I have been so sucked into what's going on. I mean, I know exactly what was going on in every confirmation hearing, and I knew everything was happening at every moment. And so it not only like lowered my productivity, but I just wasn't like in a place of, oh, wow, I feel feminine right now, you know. And there's something there's a masculine energy about resisting. You know, there's something about that it creates an opposite energy of creation. And so I think, you know, we have to kind of practice self-care in these times and think of what we can create. And, you know, sex is already out there. I mean, I a couple years ago, I was at a conference, and I met the guys who actually created the founders of FetLife. And that they are the most... You would not know that these two guys, if you met them, bumped them on the street, that this is what they did for a living. But
what do they look like?
Geeks, nerds.
Okay.
They had backpacks on, like they were just backpacks on. They were just, it was like, are you guys here for this conference? I'm like, yeah, we own FetLife. I was like, what? But I'd ask them, I said, so where does your traffic come from? It was like, you know, in the middle of nowhere, you know, cold climates and, you know, these places where people are supposed to be Bible thumping and warm and loving and all this other stuff. They're on FetLife, you know, and that's not going to change whether Trump is in the White House or Hillary. That's not going to change. People are going to continue to have this dichotomy about themselves with respect to their public life and then their sex life. And now I think it's an opportunity for those lives to kind of come together.
Hmm. Interesting, because the internet and technology kind of creates the second self, right?
Yeah.
Where you can separate from actually well, this isn't even real life, and what I do out here is some other self.
Yeah.
Hmm. Maybe they'll merge in virtual reality.
Maybe.
Yancy?
I think the only thing I want to add is thinking about diversifying where we're expressing ourselves sexually. I'm really worried about censorship and how that's going to possibly increase drastically. And what's really important is events like this, where the only ones that are censoring are we're censoring ourselves, you know?
Right.
And I prefer that over whatever's going on Instagram or whatever right now. So I think if we continue to meet up in person and make things happen IRL, that we'll keep fighting the good fight.
Okay, so were you going to say something?
No.
I was going to say, I'm going to ask one more question, then we'll throw it to you guys if you have any questions. But we have little touched on technology, and it's something that's fascinated me by how it's been so publicized this year, whether it's virtual reality porn or, robotics is introducing these AI-equipped dolls that memorize, if you like, hamburgers or pizzas. And they have 12 different personality settings that you can set from sexy to shy. It's like full-on Westworld going on. And I'm just curious, do you think that this technology is going to influence our sexuality? Is it just going to be a publicity storm and then sort of fade away?
I don't know if I would call it a publicity storm. I definitely think there are some sex tech toys that are a little more gimmicky than others. I think that there is actually a real need for these kinds of dolls. There are a lot of people who don't get to experience sexuality in any way. A lot of people with disabilities, a lot of people who have severe social anxieties don't get to have sexual experiences. And as I've said like 17 times tonight, like sex is a basic human right.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes things like sexual surrogacy and things like a very human-like sex doll can provide that kind of intimacy that people so desperately crave. So do I think that do we cross into a gray area like when we start having AI sex dolls running around just like in Westworld? Like, sure, that's going to get kind of fucked up. But I think that we should look on the positive sides of those sorts of innovations because there is a great need for them.
You're really awesome for saying that.
Thanks, girl.
Thank you.
Got you.
Yeah.
Like, really well said. I don't know. All I was thinking about when you're asking that question, it's a little bit embarrassing. I'm like really excited about this new site where I guess like what we call cam girls, well, like sex workers can give blowjobs to clients like across the world. And I'm just like ready for that to hit the market. Maybe it already has. Do you know?
Blowcast.
Cam soda,
right?
Yeah, cam soda, I think. Maybe there's two of them.
There's one you can buy for $1. And it's almost like a Yelp. You can rate different users as to the quality of their blowjobs, whether they're
so 5 stars.
So the client has some sort of device, right? And it is connected via the internet to the sex worker who gives like a cock shaped thing a blowjob.
Teledildonics,
right?
Yeah.
Right. And then I think that's really cool.
Yeah. What about when it costs $1? I feel like they really like they undersold it. Like you start out with $1.
Well, yeah, it encourages that's frequency
you know,
of use.
Oh, why would you? You know.
Maybe as your star rating goes up, your rate goes higher. And maybe there's like surge pricing.
Maybe there's surge pricing.
It's
right.
The Uber of blowjobs. Thank God.
Oh my God.
You want a 5-star blowjob? That'll be $5.
I think it's really exciting. And like so many women have been able to make careers off of like good campsites or having their own apps, and a lot of middlemen, emphasis on men, are being cut out of the system entirely.
I actually think that a good point to make is that I've seen a lot of negative press around these virtual blowjobs of people being like, God, you're so lazy, you can't even go out and get a blowjob anymore. But it's like, Yes, maybe in some cases, but you have to look at the other side of the screen, which is where this sex worker, this is her main form of income, and there are only a couple of companies that make any real money off of porn, and these girls actually get the money directly to themselves. So they're sort of badass entrepreneurs in their own way, so like, more power to them.
That makes a lot of sense. The one thing, though, that, I mean, what is the cost of the loss of connection? You know, that you need, you still need human touch. I mean, babies die without being touched. They really do. And so what, you know, it makes, it sounds cool, like, to do, like, every once in a while or whatever, but if this would become, like, a mainstream thing and people were just looking to get off without connection, then where do, you know, where do we go from?
It could be a, this is going to sound cool. This, it could be like a self-selecting kind of group of people that are kind of counting themselves out of the reproductive group.
Wow.
I also think it's, I also think it's people that are exploring like sort of a plethora of different sexual options. I mean, at the end of the day, people are not going to stop fucking each other.
Sure.
They're not going to stop having sex with each other. Like, human touch and human intimacy is never going to go away. So I don't really worry about it that much.
If anything, it helps people find each other.
Yeah.
I remember watching this old documentary about people who identify as object sexuals. And it came out a while ago, and it's amazing. Like, these people had no way of finding each other. And it was this amazing, magical thing that, like, through like letter writing or something, I don't know, telephones, that they found each other.
What's a telephone?
So it's like technology is allowing people to find what they like and then find other people who are into it and safe ways to do it. It seems really empowering and exciting.
Perfect. Perfect segue to throw to anyone that has a question in the audience. You have experts up here in the future of sex. We have a question. Daniel.
Ladies, thanks for being here. Going back to the topic, thinking about this from a female perspective, since you guys all are at the cutting edge of sex, intimacy, dating, and inevitably in conversations like this, you have to kind of bring it back to the mainstream. I'm wondering, what are you guys most excited about or wish that we were talking about, we being, I don't know, society, friends, what have you, that is more at the cutting edge that, you know, normally wouldn't be able to talk about because there's not enough context or it's just that shocking or different?
Great question.
Mm-hmm.
While they think, I'll throw something in the ring.
That's an easy question, sorry.
But I think it's really interesting because for a while we've made this excuse about technology that it's just technology and it can't be creative or spontaneous like a human can, or it can't have this sort of memory like we can, human qualities. And what was interesting to me when I was interviewing Matt McCullen, who is creating these real dolls, is collaborating with AI companies and looking at how he was putting emotionality into these dolls, which really was a head fuck, right? Like, if you come home and this doll has cameras in its head and it remembers, it has memories of you and remembers you and it adapts to you, that it can remember memories that you've had or experiences you've had. It can detect whether it's on the street or whether it's in your bedroom. And so suddenly technology is not just this thing that is relegated to like, oh, I'm going to fucking have a doll blowjob. It's something that remembers you. It puts the intimacy almost, it's like this middle space, almost in between sex and fucking, making love with your partner, and this gap in between. And suddenly, like, AI and stuff are rushing in. So for me, that's really interesting. What will humans' response be? Because I'm like, oh, it's kind of cool. I remember to smell like hamburgers, you know?
I think something I am really excited about is this whole concept of feminist pornography. I guess you know more than I do. But, like, I think a lot of people are, like, you have Cindy Gallup with Make Love Not Porn, and she's doing all of these really amazing things. Of course, you have Mackenzie with Math Magazine doing really cool feminist pornography. And I think that a lot of, I mean, I don't think I know, that a lot of porn is made for men, for the consumption of men, and women fucking like porn too. So having these new ways to experience porn that isn't just like an objectifying gangbang is an exciting thing for me. And I don't think a lot of people know even how to get their hands on stuff like that yet. So that to me is a very exciting, exciting thing for me.
Right on.
Okay, so what I'd say what I'm excited about is the expression of sex in communities of color. I think where I feel as a Black woman, oftentimes I'm fetishized, and it's like, I'm into this, or I'm into that, or, you know, the depictions in media and in TV are sometimes negative. And I'm fascinated by more people of color owning up to who they are sexually, having an opportunity to do that without being demonized by their own communities.
Nice, Susan. I've been thinking a lot about the people in my community who are like identifying as like super kinky and down with porn and stuff. And I really want to reach the people who maybe don't want to be so outspoken, that want to learn about these things and engage with them, but don't necessarily want to be a public figure talking about it on podcasts. And I think having permission to explore all the sort of gray areas of identification with sexuality can be really empowering. Sort of like circling back to the 50 Shades thing. Like, it doesn't have to be BDSM in a dungeon, and, you know, you don't have to wear a collar out in public. You can keep it private, and it can still be just as sincere of a desire or intense of a need.
Question. I'm a lawyer who works in internet technology regulation. I'm super interested in hearing your perspective on if you think that there's like a boundary of sexual technology that needs to be regulated. So for example, with virtual reality and these real dolls, you're programming with artificial intelligence. Some people have had concerns about playing with ideas of consent when there's like acting out sexual assaults or acting out sexual activities with minors or these types of things. And I'm wondering if you think there's any like boundary of regulation when it comes to technology, and if you do think there's a regulation that needs to happen, like which stakeholders should be involved in that discussion?
I think that right now it's such a gray area that it's very hard to put sanctions or boundaries or laws around this kind of stuff right now, because we're not, once we get to AI dolls who are almost humanoids, at that point the conversation is definitely going to have to happen. But I think that right now sex is actually still trying to get out there. Mm-hmm. We're still just trying to be allowed to express ourselves. That's kind of needs to be the focus at the moment. Not to say that there won't need to be regulations in the future, but I think right now it's like people are still just trying to figure out what they're allowed to do at this point. So that's my thoughts on that.
To me, it seems like an opportunity for maybe helping someone have treatment for like a desire, like pedophilia, for example. You know, if maybe there's one less person who's assaulted because of this technology, I think that would be a really positive thing, and something that maybe these types of regulations could infringe on. That's like my first concern. I don't really know that much about it, but there's almost like, it could be a really positive outlet for something that's illegal. I don't know. I just make a printed magazine, you know? I still think it's like the 60s or something.
Again, I think there you end up in a bit of a gray area, because the proponents for that are going to obviously say, you know, it's a way for these people who have this mental illness to express themselves. But then at the same time, opponents of that are going to be saying that you are excusing that desire. That is like, I mean, in a lot of cases, it's like, you know, you do you. But when it comes to pedophilia, I think that you creating a technology that allows people to virtually have sex with minors, you're now crossing into a moral discussion. And that's, again, where it gets hazy.
Totally. And I think pedophilia is something that's really hard to talk about. I read a long time ago, I read this great article that really empathized with people with pedophilia. Like, I try to think of somebody, I think we all know by now that I'm like a total hippie, right? So I look at all people with love, right? Love and understanding. So if you think of somebody who's a good person and is attracted to children and knows it's wrong, you know, like, how do they deal with that? Mm-hmm. I can't even imagine, like, it breaks my heart. And if something like this technology can help a person with that kind of conflict in their heart, I feel like it's worth figuring out. Yeah,
that's definitely an excellent point.
There's a term for that sort of pedophile. I want to say it's honorable pedophile.
I have no idea. I'm like...
There's a term for it, but they use it in sex therapy for pedophiles that know what they're doing, what they're attracted to is wrong, and so they try and abstain. So it's a really interesting question of, like, can we get this out? Is this ever going to be, like, a thing that you can outlet, or do you just abstain? Heavy question.
It's got really dark, well, guys.
I guess the reverse would be, like, rape fantasies. Same concept.
Rape fantasies, again, come in all shapes and sizes.
Naturally. I'm talking about using technology to have, like, what about, like, hardcore rape fantasies? Not the, like, kinky...
You're saying no consent.
Yes.
Like, wanting to have...
Yes.
No consent. Again, that's a one to ponder.
Technology.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is probably a tremendous opportunity to talk about, since we talk about sex and stuff abroad. There's a tremendous opportunity here to talk about the term sex, while it's sort of a big, great term. Sex is different things to many people. For instance, we all assume we have sex, we access adrenaline, we get a rush, etc. But for other people, the next step is they're really trying to access endorphins, right? And then beyond that, with BDSM, there may not be any intercourse whatsoever, and these people are accessing dopamine through pain, through control. So these sorts of things, but they're having a sexual experience. So it's a very, very broad experience that people can have.
It's a great point. What is sex?
Right.
Is Skype sex still sex?
The interesting thing is that sex, if you look at, I'll give you an example, Dr. Chris Donahue, who's a clinical psychologist who talks about this, is that really sex is, between adults, between people who are sort of consenting, is almost anything as long as it doesn't create a situation that perhaps that the person is somehow hurt or is somehow really a negative. So if somebody finds that essentially, just sort of hugging somebody and maybe taking a shower with them, for them that's some sort of a sexual or an intimate experience, and that's all that they're really capable of. Maybe they're an edge of spectrum, Asperger's, whatever it may be, but for them that's all that they need. Perhaps for them that's fine. And that's a sexual experience, and we shouldn't look at it and say, oh, that's so strange. For them, that's fine. Or for people who have these kind of intimate but sort of sexless relationships, that may work for them. We may find it to be sort of the edge of what we feel is appropriate, but nevertheless, it works for them. But for other people, maybe having sex every day, they need to have, you know, some tremendous sexual experience. For them, they find a partner that works with, and that's okay for them.
Yeah, I definitely think that an important part of the work that we do here as, public figures who are talking about these kinds of things is to also open up the idea of what sexuality actually is and acceptance of some people's desires and never looking at somebody's desires and what they find erotic and sexual to be wrong and to look at it, like Mackenzie said, from a place of love and understanding. And to understand that there really is no wrong way to express sexuality and to experience sexuality other than, like, you know, as long as the two people are consenting adults who agree to whatever the sexual experience is, whatever that may be.
You know, I also wanted to point out, and then I'll stop kind of commenting on, but I wanted to point out also that we've talked about sex relative to sort of men and women and, once again, sort of a broad term. when one looks at the sexual response of men in fMRI scans of their brains, men are, sadly, very, very two-dimensional. For the most part, having sex, masturbating, looking at their own erection, they tend to, two places in their brain light up all the time, consistently. But for women, their entire brain lights up during a sexual experience. And so women are, not a surprise, tremendously more complex than men when it comes to sex. And this can be the variation of the temperature, the room is not good, they've had a hard day, any one of a number of things can prevent them from having a good sexual experience. And I think that it's an opportunity to talk about step one, and I'm probably saying something that's infinitely simple, but that a number of people may not really know. In women, the size, this is an opportunity to talk about the size and the shape of the clitoris in women and how complex women are in terms of sexual response versus men.
Can I just jump in real quick before we talk about anatomy? I'm curious how those MRI scans might be different if conversations around male sexuality change, because I think oppression can happen in both directions, and the wide range of experiences and pleasures that men can have maybe have been limited in mainstream media, and maybe we can change the world and men can be turned off by a cold breeze in the room too. I guess I'm curious to know, maybe you actually know, if this is, what is it, like nature versus nurture? Is it a cultural circumstance kind of thing? Or do you think, are you making a case for it being inherent to men that only these two sections of the brain light up?
In this particular case, this is fMRI scans of men having a full sexual experience, so to orgasm and then and down off of orgasm, through a simply sexual response inside an MRI machine.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a fairly, you know, two-dimensional kind of read.
I'd also like to add that I think that we tend to not give men's sexuality enough credit in certain respects. There's a lot of pressure on men to perform. And we now have things like masturbation sleeves. Tango makes some really good ones. And men are, hopefully, we're starting to have a conversation where enjoying more than just trying to last 20 minutes can actually be a part of the sexual experience. And I wonder if that would actually change the way that men have sexual responses, if we could actually focus a little bit more on two people who are both enjoying a sexual experience instead of both people who are trying desperately to please the other person.
I have actually a question. We've been discussing sex with regards to basic human rights as a more on an individual scale, the need for expression and everything, and I understand that is pretty, pretty important. One thing that I would like your opinion on is the social aspect of sex. And I think this is very important, particularly from a female perspective. I think what's happening in a patriarchal society is the more female sexuality plays a major role within and gets exposed to a societal level, the more patriarchy kind of breaks down. So there's a lot of things that have to do with that power relationship and everything like that. The thing that worries me about technology is it again allows the person in Utah to actually have the patriarchal life that they're having, and then in their own privacy be able to get their fix. And it's essentially kind of, sometimes I worry that getting these fixes where people can express themselves but don't need to undergo the pressure of consent, the pressure of actually trying to respect, and all of that may have a negative societal impact. And I wanted your perspectives on whether you think, and it doesn't undermine the values of technology, it essentially is just the other side. Is it their benefits and their potential drawbacks? Is there a drawback in actually allowing people to get easy access to a fix rather than for the pressure to build up such that it boils over and becomes a societal phenomenon where everyone gets access because they're breaking down all these structures of hierarchy, the hierarchy of patriarchy?
Great question.
I think that the main drawback is, you know, when you're interfacing with a computer or some app or some other form of technology, is that you're not in communication. You're not exercising the communication skills it takes to really please someone else, you know, and you're not communicating what pleases you. You know, you're just on the computer, and so it's very one-dimensional. And if you take that type of behavior out into the world, there's still going to be a barrier between you and people. And I think I can say that from my perspective of technology in general, you know, like Tinder and all this sort of stuff, where people just become sort of, you know, one-dimensional, just really quick to judge, and you move on to the next, and you know, there's something better out there, and there's a better technology, there's a better toy, there's a better app. You're not talking, you know. One of my favorite sayings is that, you know, you can't fuck a phone.
I saw that on Instagram.
I mean, I've seen evidence for otherwise, actually.
I mean, sort of, you know what I mean? But at the end of the day, like...
Explore those vibration settings, you know.
And then put it in your
right, that's a good point.
That's
good
like
point.
Those old school before we all got vibrators, like, oh, I got my phone, that vibrator.
I gotta call myself. I do want to advocate for actually all these different ways that we can communicate through technology. Mm-hmm. I've been talking with this cam girl who does, I guess, it's called C2C, I think, where she can see her client and they can talk. And she told me they're actually, like, they're pretty hot. Which is like, okay, cool, all right. They're not all like let go of their physical realm or whatever. But I think also everybody thrives with different forms of communication. Like, for example, I did really well in OkCupid because I can write well. And I do well with like flirting with typing, through typing, right? And I think somebody who's like really awkward in person would thrive there. So I think like technology is just creating new paths for mm-hmm. flirtation and experimentation, where maybe it was really limited to just in-person interactions, where some people just like suck. So it just seems like more opportunities.
Yeah. I actually have a personal story around that. I don't think that I would be with my current partner, who I've been with for 3 years, if it weren't for Tinder, because he was so incredibly socially awkward in person that I thought he hated me on our first date. He like didn't speak, and I was like, well, that...
This was on your date? You thought...
We talked on Tinder, and he would like had really good app game and was really witty banter, and then I met him, and he just like didn't speak the entire time we were on a date. I'm a talker, but like he didn't really talk, and I walked away from that date thinking, fuck, that guy really didn't like me. And then he texted me the next day and was like, I had a great time, do you want to go out again? And I was like, what the fuck? But I did, and if it hadn't been, I gave him another chance because of the texting before, and then it turned out that he was just really nervous. So if I had just met him at a bar and he had been like weird to me, I would have like, please lose my number. So I think that that's an interesting little anecdote to illustrate it.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, but it's also like, if you're just in communication, if you just say, look, you know, I noticed that there's a difference when we're in person or over the phone, are you just not, you know, is it awkward for you?
Yeah. Wish I'd been that brave.
All right, the clock is ticking down. One more question.
So I read something really interesting a little while ago. It's how we're still evolving physically as humans, and part of evolution is people who like somehow can get, you know, access to better mates. They're the, like, it's their traits that are then, you know, reflected in their offspring. And back in the day, it was like, well, as a man, you have to be like grown, you have to earn money well or something, you have to be a desirable mate. Now, people are theorizing that actually people with longer thumbs will be evolving because they're like faster at text responding.
Oh,
like,
that makes me want to cry.
And that makes me think about, well, like in terms of the future of technology and sex, like if we're going to go like the virtual reality route, are people who, like one of the things is VR, where they can't get it right, is some people, when they put the helmets on, they still get like a little seasick, but some people can handle it better. So are like people who are like, less seasick in virtual reality, is that who's going to be left? And I'm just curious what you guys think. Like, are we going to evolve 100 years from now?
I just really hope that that's not true.
Long thumbs.
He's got long thumbs. Mm. You know what they say about long thumbs.
Just press the crap out.
Good at texting.
Beats me.
Yeah, that's...
Well, technology is so happens so fast versus how long does evolution really take in life? You know, I know you look at animals and it can take over, like, let's say, for example, a 10-year period of a group of fish or something. So technology can change, 100 times in that period. So I don't know the answer to your question.
I doubt it would be the long thumbs because I don't think texting with your hands is going to be like the forever thing.
Right, yeah.
So, that like texting with the eyes.
Yeah, that could totally change.
Strong eyes, strong offspring.
Yeah. Okay, well, that almost wraps it. I wanted to ask one last question of each of you to just finish the session before Kaylin comes in and plays some more music.
Thank God. But
thank you. I think, Mackenzie, what I wanted to ask you is there like a surprising, happy surprise in one of your issues? Happy ending. I don't know. But like,
yeah,
what was like a surprising response you had from a reader or a story that you'd like to share with us?
I mean, every time someone tells me that they read the magazine or bought it and that they liked it, I'm surprised and delighted.
Is there a particular shoot that really pushed it for you? Is there a particular shoot in there? I know I saw one where there was like a tongue with an egg on it and a dick tied up with rope. But like, was there an issue where you were like, we're going to really push this?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I think defying definition, like not letting our magazine get pinned down too tightly, has been the most boundary pushing thing, sort of not succumbing to some pressures to be porn for women. You know, we are actually porn for everybody, and not having themes and things like that. So I think by insisting on existing in these in-between spaces and exploring these gray areas that are pretty hard to define, that has been the most boundary pushing thing.
Thank you. Lydia, you talked about people of color just being honest about their sexuality or their fantasies. I'm wondering if there's something you want to push on that or expand on that point that you make, because I think it's really poignant.
I think first is just giving ourselves the permission to have, to have pleasure. I'm first generation immigrant. My parents are Cuban and Dominican. And, our life was just surviving here, being here. It's an opportunity to be here. Make sure you work, you work, you work, you work, you work. And for me, I'm like, wow, am I enjoying life? Am I enjoying pleasure? Like, my mother taught me, my mother's religious. And so she taught me about sex through a book that she got at church. That showed a picture of a fortress, a closed one and an open one. And you had to be a closed fortress. Don't let boys touch you. And that was, what I learned. So so just speaking as a Latina and as a Black woman, I think it's taking sex out of the Bible, kind of separating the two, that you can be... you can enjoy pleasure, enjoy being desired, and not, be a trollop or, the name of the prostitute in the Bible. But separating those two things. Yeah.
Wow. Thank you. Last question.
Oh God.
What are you going to tell your kids about sex?
I actually come from an extremely, extremely open background with my parents, to the point where my dad sends me like lists of erotica books that Amazon sent him as like the top erotica books.
And
he'll be like, you'll love these, I think, maybe. And then my mom is like on the phone.
You should start a podcast with your dad.
I want to start a podcast with my mom. I actually wrote a whole article about all the amazing things she taught me about sex. Basically, she was naked my entire life and told me that sex was beautiful and amazing and was the best thing ever. And I mean, it's obviously no coincidence that I became this very sexually open, proud, slutty girl who, like, experiences sexuality in such a great way. And I think that I plan to be the exact same way with my children, because talking about sex and talking to your children about sex is how we change the conversation.
Thanks, ladies. Thank you so much for coming. Future of Sex, this was the first live recording, and we're going to have Kaylin play afterwards. Make sure you subscribe, and thanks to our sponsors. Thanks for Sweatshop for having us, Ryan and Luke. Big round of applause for them. Sean Mulholland are providing the beer and the Jim Beam, so please tuck into that afterwards. And thank you to Gigi, Lydia and Mackenzie. Please give them a round of applause for coming today. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Future of Sex, the podcast that explores the evolving worlds of sex and tech. I hope you liked that very special episode of our first live show. There's definitely more to come. So if you like that show, go rate us on iTunes, subscribe, tell your friends about us as well. And if you would like some more details on the next event, head to futureofsex.org/events. Thanks so much to Gigi Engel, Lydia Bonilla and Mackenzie Peck, and of course the crowd on Monday for being a part of this episode. If you have any questions or feedback or just want to keep up with what I'm doing, follow me on Twitter at Bryony Cole or drop me a line on email at hello@futureofsex.org. Talk to you all soon.